do you think? I'll walk up with you.
Thank you for your patience this morning. We are in a new space and doing it a new way, but we are excited and we know that you're going to bring us many ideas and perspectives that are necessary in terms of the work that we are looking forward to doing in the years to come. So right now we're going to get started. And we introduce you to the man who made this all possible this year and is still kind of like trying to figure out, you know, which way is up, and he knows, Musa Zuwana.
Oh.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Don't mind me if I get a little choked up. I am very, 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 very happy to see all of you out here today. This has been a dream for WCAA ever since we put in for our license 3 and some odd years ago. Al Davis introduced us to this. Barbara Spring, one of our board members, she sent me out there. I met so many wonderful people, came back and was like, hey, you guys, we got to bring this to Albany. We've got to bring this energy, the love, the skills, the understanding here to help our station and our community to do better. And the fact that you all are here now is really a dream come true. So first, let me try to thank people. I want to thank all of our volunteers, Caitlin Redding, Al Davis, Lisbeth Calandrino, Yolanda Caldwell, Ursula Rudenberg, Sherry Bailey, so many people that have put in a lot of time and effort to make this thing happen. I want to thank our board for allowing us to do this and making it possible here in this building, this lovely building that you see. A little bit about Grand Street Community Arts Center. I believe the building was originally a church, St. Anthony's Church. Back in the day when they built the Empire State Plaza, Rockefeller, he took out an old Italian community, which really, you know, what made this church survive. And so it went into disarray for a while. Some community people got together. They bought the building, originally turned it into the Mansion Hill Neighborhood Center, something of that sort. But eventually they turned it into the Grand Street Community Arts Center, where it's ran many different programs for community youth, community adults. We put in about 3 years for our LPFM license. We got it. We got our antenna on the building early February of this year, which was really, really big for us. And I'm sure most of you, you know how that feeling went when you were like, oh my God, we actually really have a station. Larry, our board member, what's the name of the construction guys that went up there? Marty Beckman. We want to thank those guys who, some of you have seen people who climb up on these towers and put another tower on top of a tower and then climb up that tower and put another tower on. I was like, thank you, because I wasn't going to do that. I want to thank our sponsors, Cats Kit, who's sponsoring our indoor camping. Al Davis, who I'm sure many of you know. I want to thank the Sanctuary for Independent Media. That's another local group out of Troy, New York, who's not too far. They also got their LPFM license in the same window we did. Want to thank Telos Alliance, as well as SCMS and Jim Peck, who's here, for coming out and showing their wares and the assistance that they've given us in getting up and running. I want to thank who's not here, Andrew Willis and ECWA Local 102. That's a local union that came in here and did the lovely, as you can see, this is new paint. This isn't like old paint. Like, this is brand new paint. They came in here, they spackled walls, they put up the things, they got up there, they again, I was like, thank you, because I wasn't going up there. I want to thank our opening speaker, Chris Maxwell, who Caitlin will be introducing soon. I want to thank our keynote speaker, Laura Flanders, from the Laura Flanders Show and Grit TV, who we will be hearing from tomorrow. I do hate hearing my voice too much. I do want to say we will have some evaluation sheets for the workshops and for the conference. We would really appreciate the feedback from everyone to get an idea of how we did. Not that we plan on doing this again, but we still would like to get a bit of an idea of how we did. I want to thank Healthy on Lark, Price Chopper, and the Honest Weight Food Co-op, and Trinobago, who are all local food vendors that have helped to contribute to the event. Again, I know I'm talking a lot. Last but not least, I want to, you know, after the day's events, I want to invite everyone out. Tonight, we've got comedian Roy Zimmerman, who will be performing. And tomorrow night, we've got a local reggae band, Mixed Roots, who will also be performing here live. Also want to invite you to take a little bit of time while you're here over the next couple of days to visit some of our local vendors. We've got a lot of, you know, small restaurants within walking distance, within one or two blocks. So obviously, please come fellowship and eat with us. But, you know, if you find some time to check out some of the local stuff, take some time to do that as well. Last but not least, I want to thank Deirdre Kelly and the Free School. Some of you came over for breakfast over there. That's where our workshops are going to be. So when you walk out of here, you take a left, and there's on the corner is a butcher shop. That is Elm Street. We're doing a Nightmare on Elm Street block party for Halloween. It's going to be funny. But take a right on Elm Street, and you'll see, not even half a block up on the left, you'll see the Free School. That's where the workshops, most of the workshops, breakfast and lunch are going to be served. And we want to thank the Free School for allowing us to use their facility. And we also want to thank Frank Chapman Institute, where our indoor camping is.
Deidre's here.
Yep, Deidre's in the back. Oh, Deidre's in the back. Raise your hand, Deidre. So when we get to the Free School, if you see her, you know, say thank you. You know, learn a little bit about the Free School. It is the longest running independent free school in the United States. I was close, I probably wasn't exactly right, but if you talk to her, she'll give you the correct titles. And that's it. Before I start crying, really, I am so happy to see all of you here. Please take time out to mingle with people that you don't know. Please take time out to say hello to people that you don't know. Please take time out to tell your story to people that you don't know. Because us telling each other stories and finding out that what you're going through is not special, that you are not the only one going through it, you are not the only one that's dealt with these things, and that, you know, the person that you're sitting next to is like, you know what, I just solved that 3 months ago, I got an answer for you. And you're like, oh my God, I can't believe, thank you, I've been racking my head for a year trying to figure that out. And that's what this conference was about. That's what it was about for me. That's what I hope it will be about for all of you. And I hope that you are able to take something home with you that was useful, and that Albany leaves a pleasant taste in your mouth and a pleasant shine on your heart. Thank you all for coming.
Good morning. Without further delay, I do want to let you know that there is going to be a memorial service for Randy Steele, and it's going to be Sunday. This is the 8th. 6:30 to 9:30 at Mountain View Studio. This is at 20 Mountain View Road, or Avenue, excuse me, and it's right off Rock City Road in Woodstock. If you need more details, please come and see me. And it will be a celebration of Randy's life. And musician Tom Pacheco will be singing a song, apparently, that he's specifically written for her. So if you're interested in attending, please see us later. Now, my volunteers who are handling food did not get any numbers coming into this. So if anybody thinks they might be here for lunch, would you maybe raise your hand so that my volunteers can kind of take a count? Okay. Did you get that? Okay. All right. Thank you. All right. And then tomorrow, breakfast. Did you know we had breakfast? It's in the program. Oh, yes. It's over in the free school. And we went quite out of our way to make sure that vegans, vegetarians, and omnivores alike are all taken care of. So please, we worked hard. Please come to our meals because they're here for you and it's part of your ticket. So I think that's all the announcements for now. Okay.
For now.
For now, that's it. We'll get back to you later. So please make sure you do come for lunch. And we should have coffee by lunchtime.
We
kind of overestimated our coffee pots a little bit. So thank you for your patience with us this morning. We learned the hard way, and we appreciate that you were very tolerant. I want to echo what several things that Musa said, actually. I am thrilled to death to be here. I couldn't be more honored to be taking part of this and working with this really brilliant man. And I'd like you to take some time to get to know him. He's astounding. He is one of the most organized men that I've ever met.
That was sexist, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Do I get to say that? I've never said that in my life before. I got to say that. Thank you.
It's true. Yes, it is sexist, but it's quite true. I was very impressed. A lot of the work that I thought I would be doing, I didn't have to do. So Musa did a wonderful interview with them. It was Media Sanctuary.
Yep, Sanctuary for Independent Media.
And I just love what he said. He said that this group is a tight, loose group of people. And he went to the Ames, Iowa conference and didn't know if he belonged, didn't know really what his role was going to be being there. But as he was there, he began to realize that he is part of this community. And it's very important for us. One of our focuses for this conference is to make sure that you know you are part of a bigger community and that you belong here. And again, to reiterate what Lisa said, we want you to talk to each other because LPFMs historically go through struggles. We'd like you to know you're not alone, that we might have solutions for you so you don't have to reinvent the wheel, but also so you feel like you belong to a larger movement because there's a community radio station possible every 10 miles and that crosses borders as well and crosses the ocean. So please get to know everybody here and seek the help that you need. And if there's anything that you need, come talk to me, come talk to Musa, because it's extremely important that you get what you need and what you came here for. And with that in mind, we'd like to bring out Christopher Maxwell, known as Max, to his friends and his new friends, many of his new friends. Max has been a very interesting, quiet, unsung hero in the history of the development of LPFM. He's going to tell you a little bit about how Richmond, Virginia came in to save the day and helped get the FCC to recognize that we needed the LPFM. Chris worked with now Senator Tim Kaine and the activist Alan Chintzius in Richmond, and they did quite a bit, and I'll let Max tell you that story. So without any further ado, our solar energy expert and our history-making Christopher Maxwell.
Hope you guys don't mind. Pardon?
That's great.
That way it'll slip out, right? I work in radio instead of TV, so I'm going to have notes. Hope that doesn't bother anybody. Oh, yes, thank you. I prefer standing for now. So, I'm really honored to be up here because, frankly, it's pretty awesome to follow somebody like Musa that, as she said, I usually see that kind of calm demeanor and organization in somebody who's like 60 and has a lot of spare time and has already figured a whole bunch of stuff out, and he's not 60, so that's really amazing. So, you know, I really hope he's just got, like, he's going to basically live two lifetimes because of that. That's pretty awesome. And, you know, obviously this is going to be impossible for this to be a comprehensive history of the LPFM, because just the people in this room who had a key role in LPFM history at different points, we could spend 15, 20 minutes on probably 5 or 7 people just in this room alone. So this is just going to be my little thin slice, not comprehensive history of LPFM. The short version of my history is I live in Richmond, Virginia, the capital of the old Confederacy. And that will be important, so I'll explain one. And so it's a short drive up to D.C., so of course I drive up to witness the vote, and I'm standing in the audience, I'm way in the back, I'm not anybody. I'm just some guy who led 5 other people in Richmond to do some cool things that I hope would make a difference. 5 people. And we just kept trying. And it turns out that persisting is what makes us succeed and be unique. I mean, yeah, we have other individual reasons that are unique, absolutely. But I mean, in the global scheme of things, what's going to make my point in history is just that I persisted. It's not that I'm super brilliant or that I'm super innovative. I just kept at it. And any one of us can keep at it. And the fact that we're sitting here means we kept at it. And that's why we're here now. We just kept at it. And sometimes you end up standing at the hinge point of history, and the whole world revolves around you just for a brief moment because you persisted and you just kept at it. And that's what happened in Richmond. And the short version is I'm standing in the back, and after they vote, an FCC staffer walks up to me and says, "Are you Christopher Maxwell?" Now, this is before 9/11, right? You can just walk in. You don't have to have name tags, you don't show them your ID. You just walk into the commission. I'm like, how do I know that? This is 1999, just at the very beginning of 2000. There's no YouTube. There's no LinkedIn. My picture's not all over the web. How do they know that this guy, very specialist, Christopher Maxwell, standing in the back of the FCC commission chamber? But they knew. They came over, a person. They said, "Are you Christopher Maxwell?" I said, "Yeah." And I said, "Well, we just want you to know that it was your resolution in front of the Richmond City Council that was the final straw. You know, like in the Monty Python movie, it's life or death." Right. Yeah. The FCC staffer said it was your resolution in front of Richmond City Council that enabled us to finally go to the FCC commissioners and tell them, "Look, every corner of the United States wants this. Let's vote on it." And then they did. Like, within a couple months, we got the resolution in, like, November, and in January, we had LPFM. So, you gotta keep in mind, I had no idea that it would make such a difference. I just thought, look, there's 4,000 groups out there. There's, like, I forget the exact number. What was it, 7,000 or 13,000? I can't remember. Had commented to the FCC, the most comments the FCC had ever received, ever at that point, in favor of Locar FM. From every kind of view you could categorize, left-wing, right-wing, religious, atheist, the whole gamut, black, white, male, female, just every kind of person you can think of, was writing in the FCC saying, "Yes, we want LPFRS." They called it Locar Radio Service at that time. "We want LPRS." Never happened to them before. It has so many comments. And yet there was this weird little hole. Like, all these comments from all of the United States, except from the Southeast. There's something weird about the American community South. We just don't. I don't know what's up with that. And so, I didn't know it was going to make such a difference. And I thought, well, this is crazy. Why is the South coming? Okay, I'm going to get a resolution. So we went to City Council, to a relative of mine at that time, named Tim Kaine, who's now senator. He was mayor. And he was just perfect for the job. And again, there's no academic numbers, but he was on the FCC's committee for how the FCC policies affect municipalities. I forget exactly what they titled that committee, but it was a committee about how our policies affect municipalities. So he was getting all the internal memos. He was a politician, so he knows all the buzzwords. He knows all the right people, all the right buttons to push to have it work the right way. Of course, we send it out to our congressmen, our senators, and of course the FCC. And again, it's just a confluence of the courses of history, the flow of history, just ended up just pure dumb luck. But you know, I'll take pure dumb luck. It's great. It's a wonderful thing. So, you know, in spite of making it sound like it's so easy, we all know this is actually really hard. It takes years to pull this stuff together. And we need to keep trying, and that one doesn't work. We try this, and that doesn't work. We try this, and that doesn't work. And just keep persisting. And eventually, the 15th or the 20th time, it works. Woo! And we just stand up and talk to you on the radio or TV. And, you know, I bet a whole bunch of us thought, oh, the FCC is going to be the hard part. And then you go to get your antenna mounted somewhere and find out, oh, no, that wasn't the hard part. I had no idea there were so many ways that municipalities can figure out how to keep you from adopting that puppy onto a tower somewhere. You think getting rid of kittens is hard, you just try to find a place for an antenna. Yeah. And so, I mean, raise your hands. How many people here thought the FCC was going to be the hard part, and then you went to go get a permit to raise your antenna and put it on something? Yeah. Right. There's going to be some conversation later in this conference about strategies and, well, you thought the FCC was the hard part, and now you got to put the antenna somewhere. So, that's a little plug for, you know, what's going on later in the meeting. And, you know, there's also good old board development. It sounds so mundane, but then it turns out that, gee, personality clashes is important. Really, that's your whole plans just completely sidelined, right? And you're on the verge of this hostile thing, and we're fighting over what? You gotta be kidding! Now? You can't wait a week? No, they gotta fight right now. Yes, I'm sure. How many of y'all had that kind of experience? Yeah, see? Uh-huh, see? Many of us have had a lot of these experiences, and we're going to be talking about it later in this meeting. So, you know, that's kind of the theme for me, is you just got to persist. And, you know, a minor personal note, I got a diagnosis of prostate cancer about 2 years ago, and, you know, I had the usual pity party, and then thought, well, how would I have done my life differently? And I realized, you know, I probably would have done the same thing. And I wish I were wealthier, but frankly, I hear so many people, I grew up in South Florida, I have so many people come up to me when I'm bagging groceries telling me, I scrimped and saved my whole life to come down to paradise. And then I broke my hip, and I can't enjoy anything. Enjoy your life while you have it. Enjoy it now. Don't scrimp and save for life you may never have. You may never have. But I would have probably just kept doing the same thing anyway. I wouldn't have been here anyway, because it gives me this sense of creativity and purpose in life. And I have actual moments I can look back on. For example, when I did the Cable Public Access Program before we had an FM transmitter, I followed this crazy woman around named Gwendolyn Hedgepeth, because she was opposed to this incinerator. They're going to build in this poor neighborhood. And it was a university president that wanted to retire from being a university president and build an incinerator to dump crap on people. And I'm like, who are, what? So I followed her around the camp, put all her stuff up on the table. She won election. They stopped the incinerator. And that was my introduction to how this stuff really works. It actually really made a difference. Now we're not going to get trash from like 5 states around, dump it into my neighborhood. And you got a concentrator out of it, and she's pretty cool. So, this stuff actually works. It's amazing. I get on and get 15 to 22 phone calls an hour. And I mean, from the whole spectrum. Right wing, right next, left wing, whatever. The whole planet. We can create this conversation using something called the Socratic method that I discovered through creativity. And it's amazing how it works. That's another session. And that's what makes us here. That's what makes us unique in the sense of impact, is that we see that problem in a way, we want to do it again, and so we persist, we try again, and then we come here and we find out, hey, what works for you? Oh, now I don't have to persist on that thing anymore. We can actually move on to some more orbit stuff. So a little bit of the context of the history that led up to some of these moments, I think will help you understand why we should persist, and why we do persist, and how it can make a difference, right? So I told you that I'm doing this resolution in the capital of the old Confederacy. And why that makes a difference? Well, Richmond, until very recently, was a very sleepy southern town. And it was the home of a one James Kilpatrick. Do any of you remember that name, James Kilpatrick? No? Oh wow, this is great. I'm actually glad you don't know this preacher. This prayer was the,
The preacher and critter.
Yeah. I'm sorry, I insulted perfectly good critters. So, this person was the editor of Richmond Times Disgrace, and he dispatched. And in the 1950s, from his lofty pulpit of being the editor of the newspaper of record for the whole state, because this is the state capital, right? Capital of the old Confederacy, Kansas State. And he is editorializing in favor of this thing called massive resistance. Don't y'all know what massive resistance is? Yeah? Not that many. Wow, okay. Massive resistance was the original deconstruction of the state. The massive resistance said, we are so absolutely positive that we do not want black boys and white girls to be coalescing with each other as children, that we will destroy public infrastructure in the form of turning the schools off, to shutting schools down, and having no public education at all, rather than have black boys and white girls. And I say it that way because that's the paranoia. That's exactly what they were worried about. They were worried about intermixing the race. Like, oh my God, they are so deadly serious that they will just shut the whole school system down. And then when they can't succeed at that, they'll just walk away from their houses. They may walk away from something they steer and save their most valuable investment of their lives. They will just drop it and walk off and go build a whole new house out in the suburbs. Think about the level of angst necessary to go that far. And James Kilpatrick is leading that as the rhetorical leader of the Richmond Times-Dispatch in the 1950s. That's the city that many decades later, with the majority of African American city council, voted unanimously for low-power FM and was the only major city in the southern southeastern United States to support LPFM. And that's part of that history, part of that context, why it made such a difference. And why the commission saw that and said, yeah, I think we can now safely say every corner of the United States wants LPFM from all parts of the political, religious, ethnic spectrum, any kind of spectrum you can think of. Yeah, so what did construct the state? You know, when I heard Brandon say that, I'm like, I know where that came from. And that's why we persisted makes a difference. Because people persisted, and Richmond's a very different place now. So, you know, why do we need help with them? Well, you guys probably know, I hope, that there are just been constant efforts to consolidate media into fewer and fewer and fewer controlling minds that were more and meager and more male all along. You know, in 1970 something, I'm a kid riding around in near, you know, 60 miles north of Miami, and I just little AM radio, and I'm looking at this amazing radio station, AM radio station. Remember when I used to play music on AM radio? How many of y'all remember that? Okay. To go work at WPDR, 1340 AM, a little bit on 800 watt, nothing. And I got that lesson again. Nobody, even though there are just scads of patients speaking French Creole in South Florida, nobody would carry a single solitary French Creole program. Nobody. No religious station, no public radio station, no community, no college, no station. So they bought airtime. You know, right alongside the city, going right alongside the city, going to sales and then crazy religious guys. They had their block of time. And it was successful. They just kept growing it because they had more and more advertisers buying up and buying their airtime. Now they own the station, but not back then. And it just really caught my attention in a big way. I'm an engineer, I don't speak French, not especially in Creole. And I'm just running all the equipment and just kind of keeping the station functioning for them. They bought the airtime. And I'm getting phone calls and finding out these people are calling from 40 and 50 miles away and Richmond, South Florida. Oh my God. You could turn on car radio and get 63 to 65 stations back then. It was so competitive. And in spite of that extremely packed radio dial, they had listeners 40 and 50 miles away. They would literally drive up to the restaurant, reach to their portable radio in, and then drive back to their house and walk around the house like this. Until they found that sweet spot and they mounted to the wall there. That's dedicated listenership. Huh? Yeah. And that really just made it so obvious to me that if you have compelling, connected coverage and content, they will go out of their way to pick you up. They will really try hard to be a part of what you're doing. So if your phone's not ringing, if it's not happening, you know, go find somebody who doesn't have a voice and make sure they get in there somehow. Get that phone alive. That's the past and the future and the functional, fun present of community radio. Is that phone alive? You can get that thing to ring 12, 29 times an hour and you're really good. And it's possible. That's what happened at Cable Access when I saw that. That's what happened at WPBR 3048. That shouldn't happen. You know, it's just really, it's just amazing. And I already mentioned Tim Kaine. You know how Tim Kaine got to be on city council in the first place? You can imagine what kind of story this is. At that time, he was running, in 1992, I think it was, he was running against this other preacher named Ben Warden. And my friend Alex Lindsay walks up to Ben on the sidewalk and asks him some policy questions. And Ben curls his lip, who are you? It's whatever. And walks up. Sends that down and then walks off. And Alex says, well, I guess we'll find out. So he cancels his work for the day because he's an independent contractor, he can do that. And he gets on his roll of days. And he calls 300 people that day, asks him to go vote for this new nobody named Tim Kaine. And guess what Tim Kaine won by? Yeah, he won by 300 votes. I doubt they were all the same votes. Because, you know, people will tell you they're going to vote and they don't. But you know that it makes some difference. And you know, Tim Kaine remembered that. So when we went to him in 1999 and said, hey, we need this resolution, he remembered us. And that's how it goes. You know, you try this little thing and it works or it doesn't work, you just keep persisting. And eventually, it builds. Each thing builds on the next thing. And then amazing things can happen. And you just have to keep persisting. You just have to keep trying until you can. And then, you know, that's what I decided to do. So, another little bit of context that is not top secret, but I think it bears mentioning in the context of this history is why do we even need community radio? Why do we need a health care center? Well, I'm sure we know this how commercial radio kind of sucks. It didn't used to suck that bad. We used to have actual talent doing fun stuff. And it was like a local guy, of course. We'd be meet him on the sidewalk. And, have a conversation. You call, you pick up the phone, you dial a local phone number, not 1-800 fuck off. It was a local number. And they actually answered. And you actually got on. And it was great. Hopefully this isn't being broadcast right now. We're going to have to So, what killed all this awesomeness? Well, it was a perfect storm. It wasn't any one thing. It was the 1996 Telecom Act as a part of the Contract on America. that allowed massive salvation. The 1996 Telecom Act really created the opportunity, but it wasn't the whole story. The other part of the story is that there's this thing called a private equity fund. Sounds really boring. Well, what it means is you take private equity, you put a down payment, and you can bid higher than any other sane person in the room for this radio station. So, like, let's say the normal price for a radio station would be 9 times what you could earn in a year. Well, because you're a private equity fund and you don't have stockholders, you can bid it up to 13 times, so you get the radio station. Well, how do you pay for this obscene, overly priced purchase? You fire the staff. But they think the program is so good, they haven't caught on. And so you're still selling advertising at the rate back when you used to have talent. Right now, this doesn't work forever. People catch on, but not right away. This is the game. Because the equity fund got their profit up front. They got fees, and they wrote it off on the taxes, and they only pay 15% on their income tax that they earn. You know, nobody makes money except for the feds and people that print money illegally. The rest of us earn it, or we collect it, or we concentrate it. We don't make money. And the words we use matter. These people aren't making money either. They're just getting it, concentrating it, not paying their fair share of taxes, and then turning around and doing a hostile takeover of another radio station, and another radio station, and another. And now the Telecom Act lets them put it all in one building, and then the next part of the perfect storm is we now have computers. We did not have computers in the 70s, and now we do. In the 90s, we had computers. We had programming all lined up with voice tracking. So now you can fire the staff. You couldn't do that in the 70s, but now you can. Okay. Right, so it's like a perfect storm of computers, the very low taxes that they're paying, and the Telecom Act. And so that is how they stripped a whole entire radio industry of its staff, of its soul. And then, here comes another part that's not top secret, it just doesn't get talked about that much, the religious network. They just start building like crazy. Why? Because now the FCC has allowed them to take a fee from a satellite. Before 1980, you could only take it off of another terrestrial station and have it be within line of sight. You had to literally physically build out a network to do that. Well, now if you can go from a satellite, anywhere you can see the sky, you can plop an FM transmitter and broadcast the same religious content. Boy, did they do it in space. I remember driving across Alabama, and I heard the same AFA, or AFR, the American Family Radio signal on 5 radio stations. And I'm looking around. I haven't seen another person in a car for 5-10 minutes. Just cows and soybeans everywhere. 5 stations? There's no same company, or school, or non-commercial anything that would spend that much money to build 5 transmitters in the middle of nowhere. But the religious folks, they don't operate on the same economics. They get the money. They don't get the money from the community donating to the radio station. Yeah, they get some. It's mostly through their religious networks that they get the money to buy these transmitters. So they're just swamping the system with applications. In fact, they're so aggressive that we didn't used to have filing windows back then. You would just file whenever it occurred to you, and you fill out your paperwork, you give it to the FCC, and now it's public record. And that's important because what they do is they're scanning the public record and they see your application, they make another application that's very close, but just a little different, so that all of a sudden you're in a match with them. And then they just outweigh you, they outlawyer and out engineer you. Because they have all this money. And they can just buy lots of engineers and lawyers and just keep you from having that frequency. And they literally will either let their application die. I've had them actually tell me to my face, we would rather our application die and keep you off the air than to come to an agreement where we both could get on the air. They're that aggressive. And so they'll just build up all over the United States and eat up every frequency. So the FCC changed the rules. They don't do it that way anymore. Now they have filing windows. Why? That's one of the big reasons. The filing window means that nobody else can copy your application locked with her. Nobody knows if Lusa applied until after the final window is closed, and that's because of these religious broadcasters that would just file on top of regular community groups, commercial groups, really anybody, they don't care. Just as long as they're heathens, they're going to file on top of it. Oh, and apostates are worse. Another religious group that's even worse. And so they're battling with each other too. So that's why just the frequencies have just been sucked up hugely by the 1996 telecom, allowing consolidation of computers, and then on top of that, the religious networks now can repeat their programming with satellite. So they're doing the same thing, but now they've got one computer feeding a satellite. They can do hundreds of radio stations with one voice track computer. And that's how they killed the industry. That's how they have stripped it. And that's why what we're doing is so important, because we are what radio really used to be. We are in local communities asking local people to come in and share with the world. That's what I tell people, the difference between non-commercial religious or non-commercial college or non-commercial NPR affiliate and community radio is that they tell you what's important to care and talk about, and we share what's important to talk about and play. And that, by the difference, means that you get like this consistent image from their station of what they want you to hear. And you tune into the radio, community radio, it's like, you don't like what's on? Oh, wait a half an hour. It'll be all different. So we have this wide variety that is built into our structure. We are structurally designed that way, and they are structurally designed the opposite way. And that's, again, that's another example of why you persisting here now is so important, why you persisting here now is going to make such a difference. You will have your story of the incinerator, your story of something that really made a difference, because that one microphone followed that one quote-unquote crazy person around until they finally made their case well enough, and this horrible thing changed, and maybe now they're on city council or the county commission, and then they move up through the ranks to the state levels. LPFM can make that possible. You know, our economic model is not theirs. Our economic model is, as long as we can pay the bills, we're golden. Right? As long as we've got the electric bill all the time, it's working, we're good. That means we could, for example, air the city council here is live, or the general assembly key here is live, and create that excitement about what are they doing with your tax dollars? What are they doing in your name to you in this committee meeting at 3 p.m. that you can't possibly go to because you have children, you're taking care of your ill mother, you've got a job, you can't go to hang out at the General Assembly of your state or city council for these afternoon meetings, but you could hear it on the radio, and then you could call in, you could send tweets in, and they are sometimes responsive to those, and that's how we can revive, be a part of the civic fabric. We can get back together. Because right now, it's coming apart. I don't know what that's going to mean. There are some people that are openly calling for a new constitutional convention. They want to change the whole constitution. And I'm pretty sure they don't have my best interest at heart. So, I would like to hear your stories. If you're willing, I'd love for you to come up here and tell us how you persisted and your version of that incinerator story. Your version of, hey, I just thought somebody should do this thing, and I did it, and all of a sudden it made this huge difference. And I had no idea if it was going to make any difference, and then it made this big difference. I'm sure you guys have your versions. Does anybody want to come up and, or just yell it out? Okay, here we go.
Well, ours is very timely, so.
Perfect. Timing is awesome.
Hi. I'm Julio Sainz, and I'm with WPL in Rochester, New York. We were the first 24-hour Latin station there. Similar to your story of the Haitian community, 65,000 Hispanics, not a single station for them. And, you know, we've gotten great support from the whole community, who play local music, as well as Despacito and all the big hits as well. And just 2 weeks ago, We actually organized a telethon on the way across, and we raised $115,000 for Puerto Rico. That would have never happened.
Anybody else got some version of these stories? Oh, there's somebody.
There are a few people in the audience who know me. I'm sorry. I started out doing an internet radio show, and I found out about the recently at John. And I've been doing the internet radio show now for 5 years. And I cover issues and interview people, the newspaper, and the local radio stations give very little attention to. So I started with the internet, and now I'm coming here, and I think it's so important that everybody learn that there's an alternative way to get your message out. I think the fact that there's so many people that are watching news or the cell phone news, and people are not participants anymore, they're spectators. They watch and they sit on their couch and you know, just listen to what the conglomerates are saying. So I think it's important that we as trailblazers know the alternatives to media owners, because media is so important. And to get others to be inspired by it, and thank you.
Thank you.
Oh, yeah.